We come to the next pair of pieces, Beethoven's Grosse Fuge and Bill Robinson's Variations on the Grosse Fuge. Beethoven, of course, is known as being this uncompromising artist, completely sure of his own ideas, but it's a remarkable story behind this piece, which was that he was actually persuaded by his publisher to remove it from its original place as the final movement of a string quartet, Opus 130. So he was persuaded that it, really when you've done a 40-minute piece, you don't really need another 20-minute piece to go at the end of that. And so it now stands alone as its own Opus 133. But of course, performers have been left ever since wondering, well, now what are we supposed to do? The replacement finale, which is a wonderful piece, but just much less ambitious than the Grosse Fuge, or occasionally people will do both. But it's a little bit of a dilemma. But we've performed this piece most often as a single work, the Opus 133 standing by itself, which is actually, I feel, the most successful way for the piece to be done. But this is, on this program, I think for a couple of reasons. One, to really show the epitome of Beethoven at his most extreme, this experimental period. He pushes everyone, performers, listeners, himself, compositionally, to the absolute limits of what is possible, I think, to work. So it's a very, very extreme piece. Fugal technique is highly advanced, and then the emotional landscape that comes along with it is just wide open. Very pleased that we can also present a piece by a composer right here in Raleigh, Bill Robinson, who's sitting in the front row, have a chance to see his response to Beethoven's Grosse Fuge, which of course will include a piano. Bill has written quite a bit about his process of composing this piece in program notes in your program here. So really it's an interesting task that Bill set himself to respond to this piece, and I think it really is born out of what he describes as his obsession with the music that goes back to his adolescence, and a number of us on the stage can relate to that, having grown up listening to this music a lot when we were young. And as a composer, he felt compelled to respond to it. And in many ways, the pieces resemble each other. They're both about the same length. They're freestanding works that have very, very distinct sections within them. And although the particular landscape is very, very different, both pieces go for a lot of the same real moments of triumph and glory and absolute desolation and some humor in between. Bill's, I think you'll recognize towards the end of Bill's piece when the fugato bordello appears in the viola part. And maybe that's not supposed to be funny, I'm not sure, but that does come up as kind of funny. We've actually discussed how this piece isn't variations in the traditional sense of variations on a theme, but it's varied versions of the Grosse Fuge, or perhaps even reflections upon or fantasy based upon the Grosse Fuge. Stravinsky wrote about this piece, and he said that it was modern when it was written, and it will always be modern. And I think it's still true. If you're not familiar with the piece, just sort of be prepared to be a little bit in for an onslaught. But and Bill's piece takes us to some of those same limits as well. So we'll proceed with the two versions of Grosso Fugue.
Can I just add one word? The Grosso Fugue is in several sections, different fugues. There are four main sections plus an introduction, which he calls overture. And so it varies from fast music to slow music. And Bill's piece follows that general pattern, fast sections and slow sections within a single movement. And there's one bit of sort of inside humor which I enjoyed very much in Bill's piece, and that is that he gave the metronome marking indicating how fast one of the main sections of his piece should go. And he says that the speed is 133, which is very odd, until you think that that is the opus number of the Grosso Fugue. I appreciate it.